Part 14, which is entitled Freighters.
After a couple of years on the Australian routes, the Lancastrians were finally turned into freighter aeroplanes rather than passenger ones, as there were more Yorks and other planes, which I'll come to later. One of the main freights we used to carry were animals, because at the end of the war, a lot of the European zoos, having not been able to restock or even feed their existing animals, wanted fresh animals from the tropics. We used to bring animals back from the Far East, Singapore, Karachi, Bombay and places like that. We brought a lot of monkeys back, loads of them, and we found out that many of them were being used for research purposes, which didn't go down very well with some people in this country. Cages would be brought all the way through the cabin with various animals in, and the aircraft used to smell appallingly, especially in the hotter climates, to such an extent that we managed to wheedle a livestock allowance out of the company so we could get our clothes dry cleaned after every trip. Mind you, whilst doing these freighter trips on the Lancastrian, we had several interesting incidents. One I remember was that we'd picked up a couple of leopards in Calcutta. We saw them put on board and they were in one big cage divided into two compartments, with a leopard in each. I suppose they weren't very big by leopard standards, about the size of an average-sized dog, such as a Labrador, but they looked pretty vicious. We all had a look at them when we got on board, and then off we went from Karachi to Basra.
Halfway through the flight, I wanted to spend a penny. In the Lancastrian, the loo was right at the rear of the aeroplane, quite close to the leopard cage. So I went back to the loo and on returning, decided to look at the leopards, to find only one in the cage and a lot of bent cage bars. Horrified, I looked up the cabin, and in those days, as a freighter, all the baggage was piled up on one side of the plane. On this flight, there was a whole lot of mail bags. As I looked up, I saw the leopard sitting on a pile of them, just outside the door to the flight deck. I wondered what to do. There was no way of contacting the flight deck from where I was, and I would have to pass this leopard in order to get back to the flight deck. Anyway, I took my chance and rushed past it, through the door, onto the flight deck, and reported to the captain. He said, "That's a bit of a problem, as I don't think we've got anything in the operations manual that covers such a situation." We all thought about it, and having no arms of any sort on board, except the very pistol, the captain, radio officer, and I armed ourselves with poles, which we used to raise flags to put outside the plane when at foreign airports, and the very pistol, and gingerly opened the door from the flight deck into the cabin. We saw the leopard walking back along the top of the freight and the mailbags back towards his cage, so we quietly followed it, ready to attack if necessary. When it was more or less where the cage was, we dropped everything, got hold of a couple of mailbags and piled them on top of him. Then we piled on a few more, hoping he wouldn't suffocate, but at least we thought he wouldn't be able to get away for a while. We got in touch with Basra, the next port of call, to warn them because the cage was almost opposite the exit door of the aeroplane, so the ground staff would have to be very careful when they came on board. We got off in Basra and handed the plane over to another crew. We heard afterwards that they got hold of an animal handler who managed to get the leopard back in the cage and straighten out the bars. However, the story was not without incident, as the leopard lashed out at the handler and tore his knee.
Another episode with animals on the Lancastrians was on a trip to Tripoli. Tripoli Airport was an old RAF airfield with few facilities, but it did have a hangar. There was always a plane going the other way, so we left both aircraft in the hangar overnight. We were first off in the morning, so we went into the hangar and boarded our plane and looked across at the other plane. We couldn't believe it. There was a tiger sitting in the captain's seat, looking out of the window. It looked quite happy sitting there, as if ready to fly the next sector. We had to depart, leaving it there, but we heard later that they got someone along to shoot it, although whether with a rifle or a tranquilising gun, I'm not sure, probably the latter. On another occasion, we had a large Hessian sack full of lizards, armadillos, I think they were, about half a dozen in each sack, and someone had left the crew door open and when we had a transit stop. When we came back, there were lizards climbing all over the flight deck, apparently. They'd managed to gnaw through the sack and got out for a bit of freedom. Someone managed to get them all back into the sack, although they were completely harmless and actually quite attractive to look at. We obviously had to get them moved before we could take off. Perhaps the most frightening time I had whilst flying Lancastrians was when we were flying back home, I forget from where, from, and we were to transit at Cairo. On the flight there, we'd had trouble with one engine. We left the engineers to fix that engine or put a new one in while we stayed in the hotel overnight. In the morning, there was a message pushed under the door saying, would we please report to the captain's room? We wondered what this was all about. When we got to his room, he told us there was an anti-British uprising going on in Cairo with riots all over town and fires everywhere. It was rumoured that they were heading up to the hotel where we were, the Heliopolis, on the outskirts of the city. We went up onto the roof of the hotel and could see these fires all over the place, and we wondered what to do.
We stopped another night, and in the morning the captain decided we would leave. We got transport to the airport, where we found armed guards everywhere, including on our aeroplane, and apparently the ground staff had refused to carry any luggage, etc., so we had to load the plane ourselves. They wouldn't refuel the plane either, but fortunately the ground staff had refuelled the previous day, so we had enough fuel to get to where we were going. When we called up air traffic control on the radio to get permission to taxi, they said you can taxi, but you must take off within a certain time. I believe we only had about 5 minutes to taxi out and take off. There was a long taxi run at Cairo, and by the time we reached the take-off point, the tower told us we could not take off, and they insisted we should return to the start. However, the captain said, to hell with that, and off we went, regardless. We were a bit nervous, not knowing whether we'd be shot at or something as we took off. The ATC people wouldn't speak to us anymore, so we were out of contact until we reached somewhere halfway along the route to Tripoli. It was a terrifying experience, but we made it. Alan, our first child, was born on the 17th of September 1948. We were thrilled to bits, of course, and he was our pride and joy. We'd discussed beforehand what we'd call him, and our favourite names were Alan, Roger, but then we realised what the initials spelt and thought it would not be a good idea. He then became Alan John. We always used to say it was no wonder he was interested in cricket in later life, because while Doreen was carrying him, we often used to go down and watch the cricket at Dean Park, so obviously he had a feeling for cricket from inside the womb.
It was soon after Alan was born that BOAC decided to move lock, stock and barrel from Herne to the newly built Heathrow. And that was a bit of a blow all round, of course. For a while, though, we were afforded the luxury of transport from our homes up to Heathrow, because at the time so many of the crews lived in the Bournemouth area. All we had to do was actually just operate from Heathrow. The airport at that time was virtually a work in progress. The runways had been built, but very little else. Not much in the way of buildings. In fact, passengers had to check in big marquees, and there was very few offices or anything like that. The offices were still based at Herne, and crew rostering and such like were done from there. Just jumping ahead, eventually, after a couple of years, having been transported virtually from door to door, the company stopped that and we had to find our own way to Heathrow. In those days, I didn't have a car and didn't have one for some time, and consequently, I had to use public transport. This meant either Royal Blue coaches, who did actually pass by Heathrow Airport, which was convenient, or of course the train to Waterloo and then on to Heathrow by tube, which was a bit long-winded. As I said, we didn't have a car in those days. One couldn't afford one, even on the wages I got. So we all still relied on public transport or the old bike, and we used to do a lot of cycling, Doreen and I going all over the place. Alan was a bonny little lad, and as he grew bigger and got a lot bigger, we had a proper baby seat put on the back of Doreen's bike, and she used to travel all over the place with Alan on the back. She even used to ride over from Kinston up over Alder Road and all the way out to Sandbanks to go down to the beach.
Alan gave Doreen a busy time, keeping her well occupied. He was a bonny little lad and loved being taken out in his pushchair. He gave us a few sleepless nights as well, as he seemed to dream a lot and even to have the occasional nightmare. We were very keen on having another child. In fact, Doreen decided before we were married that she would like to have four children. And as she said, lots and lots of lovely grandchildren. At that stage, we were still hoping for another child, but things didn't work out very well, and it transpired at a later date that Doreen had had several miscarriages, so it was quite a while before our next child, Pam, came along. Back on the airline side of things, there were signs of a new aeroplane coming along, a new custom-designed plane for passengers, instead of converted wartime bombers that we'd been flying. This aeroplane was made by Hanley Page, called the Hermes. I'm not sure the exact time we started to fly them, but they were a vast improvement as far as passenger comfort, etc. was concerned. They carried about 40 passengers, which is quite a lot compared to the numbers we'd been used to, and in much more comfort than before on the converted wartime planes. The only trouble from our point of view is they were rather inefficient operators as far as flying was concerned, and, well, in other words, they were too thirsty, using up too much fuel, and couldn't compete with the new American-built planes.